From the studios of WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Offshore oil and gas exploration, could it come to the North Carolina coast? Waters along the eastern seaboard from Virginia to Georgia are included in a draft plan released by the Obama administration at the end of last month. If the area is not at some point excluded from the proposal, lease sales could happen by 2021. Almost as soon as Secretary of the Interior Sally Jewell announced the draft plan that will set the boundaries for oil and gas drilling and development until 2022, opponents of drilling and critics of the proposal began lining up. Environmentalists say the risks of seismic testing, drilling, and oil spills pose an unacceptable threat. Advocates for the oil and gas industry complain the proposed map is woefully inadequate, keeping the Pacific, large swaths of Alaskan waters, and the eastern Gulf of Mexico closed to drilling. On today's edition of Coastline, we'll explore the economic case to be made for and against drilling off the coast. We'll also take a look at the environmental concerns. Later in the show, we'll be joined by a conservative economist, an environmental advocate, and a spokesperson from America's Energy Forum. But first, to help us understand the draft plan and how it might unfold, we're joined by Abigail Ross Hopper. She's the director of the Department of the Interior's Bureau of Ocean Energy Management in Washington, D.C. Director Hopper, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you for having me.
Why did the Mid-Atlantic region emerge as one of the potential areas for offshore oil and gas exploration? And why is the entire Pacific coastline excluded from the proposal? How ultimately were regions included or excluded from the draft plan?
Sure. So the way that we are governed by a statute, what the statute tells us is that we have to take a careful look at all 26 planning areas all around the United States. So every piece of the outer continental shelf is included in a planning area. So we took a careful look at all the planning areas. We invited comment from the public, from state governments, from tribal governments, from industry, from environmental organizations, anyone that was interested to give us their opinion on what areas they were interested and thought should be developed for oil and gas development and what areas they thought should be excluded from consideration. So we heard from many governors. Ultimately, we heard from over 500,000 people about their opinions, and we took all of that into account. There has been a long history of not drilling. After a period of drilling in the Pacific Ocean, there has been several decades of excluding that area. And the governors of Washington, Oregon, and California were united in their desire not to have any drilling off the coast of the Pacific. So the Pacific is not included in the draft plan.
So, Director Hopper, if all of the 22 coastal states, if governors from those 22 states had indicated strong opposition to oil and gas exploration off their shores, would BOEM have dropped the program?
No, BOEM would not have dropped the program. Governor's input is one aspect that we look at. Mm-hmm. Many other aspects that we look at include the potential for the resource there, sort of understanding how much oil and gas we think lies in that area. We look at sort of the energy security of our nation. That is part of our statutory obligation. We look at the environmental impacts. We look at the other uses of the ocean. The other users of the ocean and how these things can coexist. And so as we looked at the Mid-Atlantic and the South Atlantic, there certainly was governor interest, state government interest in many of those states, which was important, but there is also an interest in understanding the resource there and taking a careful look at how we can balance some of those environmental concerns as well as some of industry's interest in exploring that area off the Mid and South Atlantic. And that's why it's included in this draft plan.
Abigail Ross Hopper with the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, can you take us through a sketch of a timeline? We start first with seismic testing, is that right, to quantify the oil and gas reserve that might exist off the coast?
Mm-hmm. So there's sort of two. There's a timeline for getting to the final plan, which will set the areas that are able to be leased from 2017 to 2022. And I can walk you through that timeline. But functionally, sort of how will oil and gas actually be produced, you're exactly right. First, we need to understand the resources that are out there. The data that we have is over 30 years old. And so, obviously, technology has improved dramatically in that time period. And so last summer, the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management issued a programmatic environmental impact statement to allow for the permitting of that geological and geophysical testing, so to really understand what those resources are. And we have permits pending that have been filed and are pending at our bureau that we're taking a look at. So that's the first step. Once companies understand what the resource is, and if and when we have the Mid and South Atlantic in the final proposed plan, the final program, then they would move forward on exploring those areas.
How long might the testing phase be, and how soon could it start in the Mid-Atlantic region?
Well, the testing phase, we have permits pending currently, and once those permits are issued, they are good for 1 year, so that the companies will be out in the ocean surveying for up to a year.
And how soon could that start?
That could start as soon as we issue the permits. As I said, the permits have been filed, and once they are issued, the surveying can take place.
Can you give us a ballpark in terms of time frame on that? I mean, I understand the permits are pending, but...
Right. No, I appreciate that. We're not the only entity that's involved in the permitting process.
Mm-hmm.
NOAA, the National Ocean and Atmospheric Administration, has a part to play. And so that's why I'm having a hard time giving you an exact time frame, because it's not totally within our control. But we think it'll be a period of months.
Months, okay. And who makes the ultimate determination? Would it be the oil and gas producer about whether testing is successful and the reserves actually warrant drilling?
So the companies will, the industry will do that testing. They do share some of their information with us as a bureau, but they are the ones that do that testing.
And what would exclude an area from this plan? We understand that areas, as this process goes along, can be removed from the draft plan. Nothing can be added. But what might take an area out of this draft proposal?
Sure. I'm glad you asked that question. So the process we have just embarked upon is scoping for the draft environmental impact statement, and that is where we take a very careful look at the environmental impact of oil and gas development in this area. We have invited the public to comment. We're holding a scoping meeting in Wilmington soon, and we asked the public to help us understand what areas of sensitivity they think we need to take a more careful look at. So we will do that. If after those environmental assessments, the Secretary decides that an area needs to be excluded, then she will make that decision.
By opening up areas for oil and gas exploration and definitively closing some of these environmentally sensitive areas, the entire Pacific, parts of the Alaskan seas to drilling, is that making the Mid-Atlantic something of a sacrificial lamb environmentally? How did this get decided from an environmental perspective? Are the environmental aspects of, say, these Alaskan areas that are closed to exploration more biodiverse than, say, the Mid-Atlantic? Or what's the criteria?
No, I don't think it would be a fair characterization to say there's been some sort of hierarchy in treating of geographic areas. The areas in Alaska that the president withdrew last month are areas in which we had a lot of science and a lot of understanding about what the impacts and the resources were. And that is one of the things that we are still evaluating here in the Mid-Atlantic. I think we are at the exact right point to be asking these questions. Where are the incredibly diverse and valuable areas off of the Mid and South Atlantic that we should be taking a careful look at? And that's why the stakeholder engagement and stakeholder feedback is so important to us. But ultimately, I just want to say these are decisions that are based on science, on really understanding what the environmental impact of potential development is on these areas.
Many people have heard that this area is also a favorite spot for offshore wind. In fact, there's a public meeting tonight that your department, the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, is holding, I believe, here in Wilmington to talk about offshore wind. Can offshore wind and offshore drilling coexist in this area?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We think that the two forms of energy can absolutely coexist in that area.
How does that work? Is it because of this 50-mile buffer zone, or how, just from a logistical standpoint?
I think from a logistical standpoint, the wind resource is best closest to the shore, of North Carolina, and the offshore, as you have identified, there's a 50-mile buffer in which offshore oil and gas could not be developed. And so those two can happen simultaneously.
Abigail Ross Hopper, Director of the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, thank you so much for joining us today.
It was a pleasure talking with you. Thank you.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. Coming up after the break, we'll take a closer look at what oil and gas exploration off the coast of North Carolina could mean economically and environmentally. If you'd like to ask a question, give us a call, 910-343-1138. You're listening to Coastline.